Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q. Hello, Dr. Trisha.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm okay. I am satisfactory.
That's like the word fine. Did I tell you right. This before that the word fine is the total F word in our family? Like it's worse than the real F word. It's fine.
Dropped a fine on me. We're on a tangent already. This is excellent. So today's topic is about journaling. And I was thinking about this before we were getting the recording started, that probably the people who are coming in to listen to this episode may already be journalers, and that there are always going to be people who are like, journaling, like, I'm not that person. I would have put myself in that category of like, I am not a journaling person until coming out later in life. And I think we can also start a Life and Love in the Q drinking game where anytime might say, in my coming out process, you take a shot, whether that's whiskey or wheatgrass juice, whatever. But anyways, in my coming out process is when I started realizing that I needed things that helped me to feel more grounded and to be a little bit more present in my day. And then also to kind of give a little realness to some of these visions and ideas and hopes that I had for the future. It just felt really good to be able to put that down on paper, whether it was true or not. This is what I'm feeling right now. This is where I hope that I'm going. And that's my story of how I became a journaler.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, and also just writing down gratitude things as well. And I know we'll talk about that more, but it kind of started with trying to find gratitude in every day. And then it turned into journaling more. And then it turned into writing all the weirdness of my day. And then it turned into a book called Perfectly Queer and stuff. So yeah, journaling's cool. Anyways.
Well, I love that you kind of mentioned that about the gratitude, because the reality is I think, so I'm going to just assume that most of our listeners fall on the perfectionism spectrum. I think that women who are socialized as mothers fall on the perfectionist spectrum. I think that religious folk fall on the perfectionist spectrum. I think that anybody who is experiencing an identity gap falls on the perfectionist spectrum, because if we weren't measuring ourselves against some sort of an ideal, we actually would not be struggling through our identity. It's the measuring ourselves against some sort of an ideal that creates the gaps, that creates the distress, that creates the trauma. So I'm going to give ourselves permission to back journaling out just a teeny little bit and take it off of a perfectionist spectrum and say that a lot of things count as journaling. Journaling is just really the intentional recording of my thoughts, my feelings, my experiences. That's it. So let's give people permission to know that three words is as much a journal as five pages. It's not, you know, how much you're journaling, it's what you're putting down.
Yeah. How did you get into journaling? What's your background with it?
So I have a couple of stories, but my background with journaling is I've actually been a diary writer since as long as I can remember. I had the cute little furry diaries with the cute little keys.
The little lock and the key that was on every person's diary in America. Yes.
Yep. Right. So I've been journaling or writing in a diary for honestly as long as I can remember. It hasn't always been a daily practice, but it's always been a practice. And I've had times when I've journaled according to, like, I've done writing down your soul, and I've done, the artist's way. Mm-hmm. I've followed her journal prompts. So there's been times that I've done a very organized journaling. And then there's been times that I've just only kept a gratitude journal. So I've kind of run the spectrum. So why I guess one of the things that I'm thinking about perfectionism is I was working in 2020 with a hypnotherapist and a mindset coach. And one day she said to me, and she always had this phrase, and I love her, but I got in in an argument with her every single time she said it. But she always said, trying is lying. And it pissed me off because when I use the word try, I actually mean do. Mm. So if I tell you I'm trying to go to the gym every day, yeah, I already actually am going to the gym every day, mm-hmm, but maybe not seeing the results I want. So that's an example. So anyway, her and I were talking and she said, well, are you journaling? And I said, well, I'm trying to journal. And she said, well, trying is lying. You need to wake up every day and journal. And so I was already journaling sometimes for an hour a day.
Yeah.
And when she said that, I judged that that meant I must have to do more, because if my life wasn't improving the way I wanted it to be improved, if I was still stressed, then that must mean I wasn't journaling good enough.
Journal harder!
Journal harder! And I was thinking about it. It took me about a week. And I was thinking, I freaking journal more than anybody I know. There must be something.
When you said an hour a day, I was like, yeah, of course, obviously.
Yeah, but because she didn't realize how much I was journaling and I was judging myself as not being good enough, I thought I had to do more, which again is like the perfectionist's kryptonite.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not seeing the results I want, therefore I must have to do more because I'm obviously not doing enough. So that was my very first experience with realizing that journaling actually needed some intention behind it. Otherwise, it can be a dysfunctional practice and it can be really maladaptive to our growth if it doesn't have intention. But what I know is a lot of coaches, a lot of self-help books, a lot of therapists, journaling is one of the first recommendations that they make to people who are trying to change their life experience.
Oh yeah, I was going to say it's everywhere now. I don't know. There's so much conversation around journaling. And now I am so curious about the dark side of journaling. Can you speak a little bit more about how, because, you know, I've been seeing things lately too, about how meditation is something that we put out there. Meditation is only positive and only beneficial. And actually it's not for all people. So can you tell me more from a journaling perspective? What is journaling gone wrong?
I'm glad you said that. But first of all, I want to put a pin in for our audience to know that there is no one practice that is always adaptive. Hypnotherapists will tell you that every situation can be solved with hypnotherapy. It is not true. Mm-hmm. Meditation, there are dark sides to all of it. And it's really important that you understand what your intention is going into any of these types of practices. Any of the stillness practices are absolutely beautiful, but they do have that dark side. Again, it's what we talked about last week. Everything in nature has a light and a dark. Mm-hmm. And we are beings of this earth, which means we all have a dark and a light.
Yeah.
So journaling, one of the dark sides is if you don't understand why you're journaling, you can get into ruminative loops. Rumination is the habit of reliving the past and relooping so much that you actually dig yourself into deeper holes. So you ruminate an argument with your partner and you relive that argument 100 times. But when you ruminate, you actually can't change the outcome. So you just basically dig yourself into a deeper hole. When people journal with rumination active in their journaling, they dig themselves into a deeper hole. So you can actually come out of a journaling session feeling worse about life than better because you've ruminated yourself down into a hole.
So, and this may be a little bit of a tangent, but anytime I've journaled, it's been either very present or future focused. I've never kind of journaled backwards. Is there a harm in journaling back or only if you're ruminating it and can't get out of the spin? Like, is there a benefit to journaling through what you've been through?
Yes. And that, so there's a difference between ruminative journaling and reflective journaling. Reflective journaling allows you to go back. And this is actually one of the tools that I use a lot with my clients is when you do a reflective journal, you look back on the experience. So I kind of shared the example last week. 2015 had been a really tough year. But when I sat in December and I went back and looked at the goals that I didn't accomplish, I also looked at the miracles that had happened in that year that things had been so tough. There were people that popped into my life that were there just for a brief moment, but they had just the right information at just the perfect time for me to have a near perfect outcome to some of our big, big challenges.
Yeah.
And so had I ruminated and just sat and dug myself how horrible of a mom I was, how much I had failed, how I didn't accomplish my goals, how my children were making decisions that were against my church, like all these things, I would have gotten to the end of 2015 and really felt like a failure. That would be ruminative journaling. Reflective journaling was me saying, but do you remember the time that Heidi brought the nasal rub or the nasal swash, or oh my gosh, that phone call came in just the right moment for me to know which resource I could access. So one of them leaves you feeling hopeless, and one of them leaves you with the ability to see that we don't always know what's going to come our way, but there's always a key. It's like always breadcrumbs, right? Like no matter how challenging our lives get, if we look back, we can see the breadcrumbs of hope. And that helps us make it through the next year, the next challenges.
I'm laughing to myself as you say this, because thinking of it now, I did actually, I guess, journal in the past as I was writing my book. When I was writing my memoir, Perfectly Queer, I had to go back into a lot of those memories. But thinking about how you were just describing things now, I felt like I was writing about and looking back on my life, almost like I was a witness telling a story to it, as opposed to diving into the emotions of that moment and trying to relive that experience. It was just seeing it for what it was.
When researchers do like a reflective study, it's called subject-object investigation, but it is that place where you can look at a life experience where you're the subject, so you're looking at it as the person living it, or you can look at it like from an objective standpoint where you're, like you just said, where you're pulling yourself out of it and witnessing it instead of living it and judging it.
Right. And you were looking for breadcrumbs of hope. And I was looking for breadcrumbs of queerness. Like at what point should I have realized when I bought the Mustang with the racing stripes? Was it when I was lifting weights with the women's rugby team in college? I don't know. But anyways, yeah.
But the reason that helps you is then you can let your brain, on the hard days when it looks like the world has decided that they hate queer Jill, you can look and you can almost self-assure that this isn't just a decision you made because you were unhappy in your marriage. Like this had breadcrumbs your whole life. And so even if the whole world hates queer Jill loves Jill.
Yeah.
And Jill loves queer Jill. Mm-hmm. Because they're two different people. For a long time, they were two different people.
Oh, absolutely.
And now you're integrating them into one beautiful whole person. And that's kind of the value of that reflective journaling. It's an integration.
It's funny because, again, this is like, you know, in our last episode, I talked about the semantics of like New Year's resolution versus goal setting. And so for me, I didn't consider my writing of my memoir to be journaling, even though it really kind of was, because I even wrote it in my journal that I'm holding up right now. I would write down the chapters as they came to me in like downloads. But yeah, it was a journaling exercise, and it was super healing and super helpful to just have these little bursts of memories. Like, wow, I went through that. Or like, wow, now I can see how that experience, while it was hard in the moment, is exactly what had to happen to get me to here.
Yeah.
Really loved that reflecting piece. Okay, fine. I guess I journal in the past as well. Fine. You called me out. Here we are.
So I'm going to tell you, I think keeping a calendar is a journal. And last episode, I talked about January being my hermit month. Yeah. I go back through my calendar and I look, and I actually turn pretty quantitative, to be honest. How many meetings did I attend? How many miles did I drive? How many times did I go to church? It's all there. in my calendar. And I can look and I can give myself credit for all of the stuff, all of the mundane stuff that we do that we forget about. Mm-hmm. You can start looking at, like I said, look at your calendar even, and this makes sense why I'm so tired.
Right.
I ran myself rampant from September to December. And it gives us the ability just to practice a lot more grace for ourselves and a lot more compassion, where we're looking with those growth eyes. Okay, how can I better tend to myself this year if this is the way last year went?
Yeah.
What can I change, and what do I not, like I said earlier, what do I not want to change? What's working for me?
Right. Well, I think too, for the perfectionists and the socialized mothers in the house, there's a lot of times where it always feels like we're not doing enough. And yeah, I've done that too with my calendar, where I look back and then it's the reminder of, oh my gosh, look how much you did. But in the moment, because you're just going so busy, and it doesn't feel like you're maybe ever crossing off that daily to-do list, it's hard to see. In hindsight, there's a real beauty and power to it.
Yeah. And that's the power of journaling. So I know a lot of people script forward. And so, you know, they'll sit down to journal, and almost like a written vision board, they'll script the way they want things to go. And that's really, really beautiful. I'm a scripter also. But I think the part about journaling that I think is so magic is that the power that lies in that reflection backwards.
Yeah.
And it's like, I write, I have a couple of different ways that I journal, to be honest. So I use an app called Diarium, and that's on my phone.
Not a bathroom app. Diarium.
I know, it's the funniest phrase.
We'll put that in the show notes so you have the spelling on that. Yes.
And I have a voice memo that I use for my walks. And so like if I'm walking and I have thoughts, then I just voice record my thoughts. And then I have a paper and pen journal. So I definitely have a couple of different ways that I journal.
Lovely. Because I do feel like sometimes those greatest thoughts happen when you're driving in the car, or you're in the shower, or you're going for a walk. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't have a pen.
Yeah.
So love it.
So the other thing that I wanted to share about my journaling experience that I think is really interesting is, so like I said, I've been a journaler my whole life. When I couldn't figure out how I wanted to write a dissertation, I decided to write an autoethnography, which is a research study of myself, but I use 6 years of journal entries as my data. And what was kind of funny for me personally was, I don't save my journals. So I do go back and I read my journals. That's a practice I actually started after I wrote my dissertation, but I haven't traditionally saved my journals. And it was really just almost a miracle, if you ask me, that I had 6 years of journals, but they covered, it was journal entries that covered this 6 year period in our family's lives that was really challenging. And what I noticed when I went back and read my journals for my research, that there were a couple of things that I noticed that are one of the reasons why journals need a little bit more intention, especially if you're going through like this identity rediscovery, or if you're in a high conflict, high trauma time in life. It's easy to feel like journaling has no purpose. And especially, like we've already said, if you're ruminating, journaling makes you actually feel worse. So I kind of want to tell this story a little bit and then give our listeners kind of the skills to be able to journal in a way that is not only productive and adaptive, but really transformational. Because what we know in like post-traumatic growth research is that the best way to grow after a traumatic life experience is to be able to make meaning of it. That the only way for trauma to be transformational and growth focused is if we can make meaning. And journaling is how we make meaning of our lives. So that's a lot of explanation. But so a couple of the things that I found in my journal. And first of all, when I was doing my research, I read somebody else who had written an autoethnography on her life as a mother. And she had a section of her research where she was telling a story of getting an opportunity to be an adjunct professor at a university nearby. And she had a 3-year-old child. She had a newborn. Her husband had just taken a job that required him to travel 4 days out of the week. And she was working part-time already at a local school, and she was going to school full-time. So she had all of these things on her plate, and this adjunct professor position came available, and she had written in her journal, "I think if I wake up an hour earlier and I prep for my class during my lunch period and I stay up an hour later, I think I have the ability to do it." And so she decided to take this job. But while I was reading her paper, I kept thinking, don't do it.
I know, but
don't do it. Well, no.
Right now we're like, no, baby girl, no, no, honey.
So I had read hers, and totally from an outside perspective, I was able to look and say, don't do it. But then I went back and looked in my journal, and I had multiple times in my life where I had listed out all of the things I was doing. And at one point in my life during this 6-year period, I had 22 other groups of people that were expecting something from me or that I had made commitments to. So whether it was church or it was I was the president of the booster club of our school district swim team. I was the president of the booster club of our high school swim team. Like all of these different things that had my attention, there were 22 of them. And I was trying to decide if I could teach another yoga class during the week. And at the time I was teaching 12 yoga classes already.
Wow.
And I was a full-time student. And like, so all of these 20 things. And I looked back on that, you know, as a scientist, and thought, no wonder I was so freaking tired. But at the time, because I was just journaling at the end of the day, basically doing a thought dump, I didn't actually have the ability to look at myself from the outsider perspective and saying, this is too much. So that was one of the really valuable things that I learned from my research, is just how important it is not only to be writing, but to be looking back and noticing patterns, or kind of what you said, to look at ourselves from an outsider perspective, because that's where we can start making improvements. It was an obvious hell no when I read the girl's paper. Mm-hmm. And 5 years after the fact, it was an obvious hell no that I should have picked up another yoga class. Actually, what I should have done is quit the other 22 things and picked up the yoga class, because I loved teaching yoga.
Sure. I love that you mentioned looking back too, because that really, it's one of my favorite things to do with my journals. Every now and then, particularly if I'm feeling in a funk, or feeling like, you know, what are you doing with your life and where are things going? And then I look back on what my wishes and hopes were a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and to see what's come to fruition, to see the things that didn't happen, and probably for good reason why, that I can look back on now in hindsight and say, yeah, you didn't really want that. It's one of those things that further amplifies my hope going forward, because it's like, yeah, you put this vision out there, you put it down on paper, you listened to your gut and what felt good to you. And again, it's one of those things like, look what happened, look where you ended up. And also it's a reminder of when we are in our low points and in our hard points, how quickly life can change.
Yeah.
Like that from 1 year to the next can be an entirely new life.
But when we're living it day by day, it's really hard for us to see that.
Right.
It's like watching a kid grow.
You know,
if you don't see your baby nephew for a year and a half, it looks like they grew so much. But right, when you're the mom, it's just so subtle that you don't see it day by day.
Right. It's like my daughter who insists on wearing her favorite pair of sweatpants all the time. And then eventually I'm like, wow, those are looking really short on you. What happened? Oh, you must have grown. Right. Right. You do that.
Right. Anyway. Children do grow.
Right. They sure do. Okay. Back on the track, back to journaling. Can you speak a little bit too? Because I know there's a lot of people out there who offer journaling prompts, and I would love to know your thoughts on that, because I've never really worked with journal prompts before. I've always kind of like willy-nilly.
So kind of what I was saying about my friend who said, so do you journal? And I said, I'm trying. I don't believe there's a right way or a wrong way to journal. I think that the value to journaling is the intention behind it. So if you know, I'm going to give an example and then I'm going to answer your question. So I watched a little TikTok yesterday, and the person said that one of the best ways to check in with your gratitude is to notice how often you're grateful for things that you don't like. So he said, you don't like your job very well. You don't like your boss. How often are you grateful for when the boss does something that you appreciate?
Oh.
Or how often, if you're not loving your job right now and you're wanting a new job, how often are you looking for elements of your current job that you would take with you to your next job? So as I was watching him say that, I was thinking, I want to change my gratitude journal. It's really easy for me to be grateful for the sun that rises every day. Mm-hmm. I love the sunrise. I love the magic of how it just changes ever so slightly every single day. It seems magical to me. There's a couple things in my life that I'm not loving right now, but what if I could start paying attention to the elements of what I am grateful for in those? So I took a couple of hours a couple of days ago. Well, I guess it was last night. Time is funny.
Time flies.
So I just paid attention to what are all of the elements of these things that I'm not loving right now? What do I love about them? So I think it's the intention behind the journaling, first of all. And I think that that's why journal prompts work a lot for some people, because if you don't know how to journal, lots of people sit down and they're like, I don't know what to write about. Like, what am I supposed to write about?
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm not a writer, or I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. And so the power of the journaling is, again, taking the pressure off of that there's a right way to journal. Mm-hmm. So those journal prompts just give people something to start the free flow of thought. But again, there's a lot of things I think that we hide from ourselves.
Yeah.
And so that's why journaling feels hard to people. If you're having a hard time accepting that you're unhappy in your relationship, and so you're trying only to think positive. And so when you sit down to journal, and this is something I'll tell you, I found in my journals in all those 6 years, my journals had nothing to do. I didn't ever mention my children's names in my journals. I never mentioned the name of the experiences that we were going through. So no mention of self-harm was in there. No mention of tattoos were in there. No mention of church ostracization was in there. None of the experiences were in there. Also, the thing that I thought was interesting was I didn't ever journal around the big events, like my grandma passed away during that 6 year period. And I didn't journal at all about my grandma's death. And I spent 6 weeks with her prior to her passing away. And I didn't write anything about that.
Wow.
So that was one of the things that was really interesting is what I did notice all the time is the word should. Mm-hmm. The word should showed up in my journals over 200 times. And I kept trying to convince myself that the things that were challenging were blessings. And it's called master narrative scripting. But when we try to convince ourselves that what the master narrative says is true. So if I just had more faith, then this will work out. If I could just think more positive, this would work out.
Oh.
Instead of just letting myself say, this is really hard and I don't know what to do. It's better to journal, this is really hard, I don't know what to do, than it is to lie to yourself, because then what's the point of going back and growing if you've lied to yourself the whole way?
Right. And I think this is the funny part about how when we're kids and we have those journals that have the little lock that you could so easily bust off, but people aren't, especially as adults, I don't think there's people, and I can't say this in all situations because there have been partners who spy and read their partner's journals, but like your journal is for yourself. And I also found myself self-editing at points when I was writing. And I have a very specific story on that, but I'm going to save that for our dating episode.
Woo!
Weeks. So it is funny how we self-censor, or we're like, well, we're just not going to talk about that to ourselves for whatever reason. And when we can do that in journaling, I think for me, at least, it felt so freeing to just finally, at least on paper, be able to say how I actually felt.
Yeah.
Lay it all out there.
Well, that's one of the things I even wrote in my research write-up was, how do we expect women to be able to tell their stories to their best friends, to their partners, to their therapists, if they won't even tell their stories to themselves?
Bingo. Like,
if we have silenced our voice so much that we can't even tell ourselves how we feel, how in the hell do we expect to have a shared language for all of us to be able to communicate the struggles of life?
Nailed it.
Yeah. So that's my experience with journaling. It was super fascinating for me to go back and read those, and it's changed the way I journal now. So those journal prompts are really intended to help people get over the hump of what they're, like, either their own mindset block that they're not writers, or just really help people tailor their way towards growth. But again, you've got to be careful, because if you have, this is something that's on my heart a lot right now, is we have a lot of mindset and manifestation coaches in the online world who have no trauma education and actually are coming from places of so much privilege that they almost are trauma illiterate. So not just that they don't have certification in trauma studies, but they're almost illiterate in the fact that trauma exists in this world. And so it's like trying to ask somebody who is from a very strict Christian background, 100% rigid belief systems, who has never, ever known anybody on the LGBTQ spectrum. And the only thing they know is upper middle class cis heteronormativity. It's like taking a journal prompt from them that says, I don't even know, because I can only think of sassy things, but taking a journal prompt from them that's going to be able to help you in your LGBTQ coming out process, there's a good chance they don't even have a prompt for you because they can't even envision your world. Does that make sense?
Sure. So they don't have a frame of reference for what you're going through because they've never had to go through it before.
Yeah. So they can't even prompt you to write about it because their brain can't even envision it.
Right. And like the sassy example I'm getting of that is the people, like when you have children and you have the friend who doesn't have children or someone, they're like, well, have you tried, or you just need to.
Yes.
And meanwhile, you're like, I haven't showered in 5 days.
Yes. That's perfect. I was only thinking of sex examples. So, and what? I didn't like it.
We'll save that for another episode.
That's another episode. So that, again, there can be a dark side to that. If the journal prompt doesn't, again, if it doesn't lead you to feel like you can understand, and it's not that rumination is bad, but I always picture it like, this is the way I always picture it in my mind. But when you jump off of a diving board into the high or into the deep end of a swimming pool, and you're not real comfortable, let's say, with swimming, but for some reason, you've got to jump into the deep end. The best way to get there is to just jump straight down, point your toes, and just get to the bottom of the pool as fast as you can so you can kick yourself back up, right? Versus if you try to belly flop off of the high dive and get down to the deep end of the pool, but you belly flop, it's going to be a lot more painful to get to the bottom of the pool. You're going to have to work a lot harder to get yourself to the bottom of the pool and back up again. I feel like that's the emotional journal or the emotional journey of journaling. Hmm. It's okay to ruminate, but if you're going to ruminate, get down fast and kick yourself
out there. Point your toes. Yeah.
I always say it's good to take a visit in your deepest emotions, but don't set up your house there. So get in, but get out.
Okay. So I have been so anxious and trying to keep my yapper shut about this, but we are expanding into new offerings for our Q crew to offer more support, because so many of you have been so incredibly lovely with your feedback. And we are so delighted that you're following along with the episodes and that you're getting nuggets of wisdom, but we want to take it a level further so that things are a little bit more actionable. Dr. Tricia, would you like to share what maybe around journaling is coming down the pipeline?
Yeah. So in our show notes for today, you'll have a link where you can get some journaling prompts. know that it's not exhaustive and it's not for everybody. So just take it as feels good, but hopefully it will help you to be able to just journal a teeny little bit around the experiences that you might be facing right now or the challenges that you want to find your way through. The only way out is through. And so that's what these journaling prompts will help with. And then we are going to host a workshop.
Woo!
On journaling. Yeah. And walk through a little bit deeper examples of not just what I found in my research and some of the ways that I noticed my journals working, but really how you can use journaling as a transformative tool in figuring out what it is that you're navigating.
Yes. And really, I'm just super excited to hang out with our cute crew.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet your faces. So I do hope that you will sign up for the journaling masterclass. If you can't make it, we will probably have an episode playback on it as well so that you can join us after the fact, because I know not everything works with everyone's schedule and we have listeners around the world, which is incredible. Thank you, New Zealand. Thank you, Hungary. Thank you. I mean, it blows my mind. Okay. So this is exciting and awesome. And so, yeah, so check the show notes where you can find the links for everything. And I hope you got some great wisdom today. I did as well.
Been so cool.
And yeah, thanks so much. Until next time.
All right. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. Until next time, Q Crew.